From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Violence in Honduras continues months after a contentious election result handed victory to incumbent Juan Orlando Hernandez over challenger Salvador Nasrallah. Reports have been emerging of U.S.-trained special forces called Tigres conducting nighttime raids on the homes of protesters and arresting them. Hondurans are incensed about what they view as election theft, as all early indications showed a win for Nasrallah. Now, a U.S. emergency delegation of faith leaders has returned from a trip to the Central American nation. Among them was my guest, Jose Artiga. He is the executive director of Share El Salvador. Welcome to the program, Jose.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, before we get into the trip that you took and why you took it, I'm wondering if you can comment on what the latest situation nationwide is in Honduras. I mentioned these U.S.-trained special forces units that The Intercept and Telesur have reported on. We're hearing very little about that. How much of a crisis is unfolding on the streets of Honduran cities right now?
It's as soon as we left, there was a demonstration, you know, the taking over of one of the highways in Choloma, and Ismael Hernandez was assassinated, you know, a sharpshooter killed him. He was going by to his job, you know, and had to go through that part of the street as the demonstrators were, you know, occupying civil disobedience on the street, and a sharpshooter shot and killed him. I believe he's the number 37 person that has been assassinated in peaceful demonstrations.
So what is the goal of these police right now that are on the streets of various cities? Are they trying to clamp down on dissent because so many Hondurans are angry at what happened during the election?
Yes, people are very upset. You know, this is the third time that elections or, you know, their elected officials have been removed. The first ones in 2009 with the coup, then in 2013 elections, and this kind of overflowed the glass, and people are physically going to the street.
Now, let's talk about your delegation. You were part of an emergency faith delegation to Honduras in January. You went to San Pedro Sula. What did you find? What was your goal, actually, just in going to Honduras?
We received an emergency call from our friends at the radio station, you know, Radio Progreso. The director is Father Ismael Melo, that the situation was getting very intense, and they wanted international observers. He himself had on leaflets that, you know, are accusing him. And this kind of leaflets, you know, we were very familiar with assassination after you appear on a leaflet in the El Salvador conflict, you know, where exactly another Jesuit priest, you know, Father Rutilio Grande, was assassinated in 1977. So we are trying to prevent religious leaders, you know, human rights defenders to be assassinated. Mm. So we make a call, and we were very surprised that 50 people across the country signed to go. We arrived on the 24th, and we wanted to take testimony. We wanted to see what was going on. And in no time, we were able to not only get testimony, but be in the middle of demonstrations that were repressed.
And so, of course, Honduras has had a very, very strong trend of violence, particularly after the coup against Manuel Zelaya. We've seen, of course, the assassination of very high-profile leaders like Berta Cáceres. When you say people's faces have been appearing on leaflets, is this the same playbook that we have seen in Central America, you know, through the 80s, that, you know, the U.S. played a big role in?
Yes, the U.S., we met with the embassy, and we told them, you know.
During your delegation, you visited the U.S. embassy in Honduras?
Yes, during the delegation we met and we told them this is exactly what happened in the 80s in El Salvador. And at that time we told you this was wrong. And they, you know, ignore our call. And 30 years later, they are accepting, you know, all the mistakes that they made in El Salvador, you know, like big massacres, like the massacre of El Mozote, or the assassination of the 6 Jesuits and the 2 women, that at the time it was claimed that the guerrillas have done it, but eventually everybody knew, including the international community, that it was sponsored and directed by the United States government. So we are telling now that the government of the United States, do not repeat the same mistakes, you know, do not, you know, feed, you know, this repression, because we are in a very difficult moment, you know. If this situation continues in Honduras, you know, people this could develop into a war. On top of that, if you put the threat of a potential deportation of thousands and thousands of refugees, you know, from the United States back to the region, a region that cannot absorb them, this is a formula for a big conflict that nobody wants. You know, it's easy to get into a conflict, but almost impossible to get out of it. Mm.
Going back to the issue of the special forces that I mentioned, Tigres, they have apparently been trained in Honduras and in the United States by Green Berets from the 7th Special Forces Group of the U.S. military. They receive substantial support from the U.S. State Department. And according to The Intercept, they have been active participants in government repression during the current political crisis in Honduras. We don't hear very much from the Trump administration about their official position on Honduras, but as far as you can tell, what is the U.S. role currently? We know that in the coup against Zelaya, the U.S. tacitly supported that coup, but during what's happening now, is the U.S. sort of holding back, or is it in any way kind of actively participating?
The U.S. is very actively participating. In fact, you know, after the elections of November 26, you know, the local and the international community were waiting. You know, the European community, you know, was saying, you know, this doesn't look good. You know, perhaps, you know, we should have a second election. They waited and waited until the United States, you know, came and say, no, this is a good election. We'll take it. And it was, you know, like the last word. Accepting an illegitimate election, you know, the president under the constitution of Honduras cannot be reelected, period. You know, that's why, you know, they were very upset when Zelaya wanted to do a referendum, you know, and this is exactly what they are doing with, you know, one decree of the, you know, controlled by the right-wing assembly. A decree declared that the president could run for a second election. On top of that, you know, the corruption, the counting of the votes, you know, was clearly, you know, a fraud, where, you know, the opposition was winning by a big margin, and then, you know, they stopped the system went down, and when it returned, you know, Juan Orlando, you know, was the winner. That's why people, you know, you ask the regular person on the street, and they say, no, this is not right, you know, and that's why they are running the risk, you know, of going to the street, demonstrating and telling the world, you know, this is not good. And I think that we need to know why they want to impose this type of government. You know, this government will allow international companies to come and exploit mining, exploit the rivers, you know, give away the land so the palm oil industry will plant millions of trees, will give away the beaches, you know, where the Garifunas have been living, the natives, you know, for many years. So it's a puppet government that will do pretty much what the United States asked them to do.
So the U.S. is an active participant. So going back to the delegation, your delegation went to San Pedro Sula. Who were among the delegates? And what was your goal, you know, in coming back? I'm assuming you want to draw attention here in the United States of what's happening in Honduras, because it isn't getting very much U.S. mainstream coverage.
Yes, the objective of the delegation was to go, you know, get testimony, and then come back and tell the world, you know, what is happening. Delegates include religious women, you know, like the Mercy Sisters, networks like the Pax Christi International, you know, the organizations that are doing immigration work. And you know that was our intention to go and learn firsthand and physically tell the government, you know, tell the U.S. embassy, do not kill these people. You know, concretely, we want to ask them for two very basic things. You know, do not attack demonstrations, peaceful demonstrations, with illegal weapons. You know, like live ammunition. Do not throw tear gases into houses with babies and elderly people. Do not persecute the demonstrators and then put them in jail. And that's the second demand, to free the people that they have captured. You know, you are on a demonstration, you know, you have a sign that says, you know, we don't like this government. That's enough reason to capture you, frame you, and send you to jail for 10 years. You know, we think that that's not right. That's not what our money should be doing. You know, the tear gases are made in Pennsylvania. In the United States, you know, those tear gases are being thrown into houses.
So not only is it U.S. trained forces, but U.S. weapons as well that are being used in the streets of Honduras?
Exactly. We were witnessing, you know, a small demonstration, maybe 30, you know, 40 young people occupying a street. While we were there, perhaps, you know, our presence helped to delay. But at some point, you know, over 100 police and trained soldiers just jump on them, you know, and throw over 150 tear gases, which is just overuse of force. We also witnessed, you know, how at the inauguration demonstration, you know, the thousands of people are to a street, and at some point when they are going through a tunnel, they charge and they attack them with hundreds of tear gases. You know that you know, this is against civilians. You know, this is not you know, any terrorist or anything like that. We ourselves, you know, experienced that. You know, we are in front of the U.S. embassy, the 50 of us with some 500 people on a vigil, you know, with our candles, you know, singing and praying. There are sharpshooters, you know, on top of the building, ready to shoot. There are over 150 special forces against a candlelight, you know. And then around the corner, there are these two gigantic tanks, you know, with water cannons. This is our taxes at work, you know, welcoming us in Honduras.
How important is the presence of U.S.-based observers like yourself in Honduras? Did you find that your sheer presence put authorities on notice that the world is watching?
I think so. I think that our presence was very important, and we're calling for more people to go. There was this one event, you know, the first day we are in the country in Progreso. There is a mass, you know, just one block from the highway. And the idea was that after the mass, they were going to occupy the street, to process on the street. In previous occasions, that event would last less than 10 minutes because the soldiers will physically attack. So we see people as the mass is finishing, getting ready, you know, with their, you know, towels, with their vinegar. And then we start, you know, marching. We start, you know, taking over the street. And they were surprised that the military didn't attack. You know, they say, the only reason why they didn't attack this time is because you were here. So we are going back. You know, we are organizing a delegation that will go the second week of May And we hope, you know, a larger number of people from across the country, including some of our representatives. We want to call on our representatives in Congress to pay attention to what's going on in Honduras.
Now, the increased violence in Honduras doesn't, of course, restrict what's happening inside that country, right? There have been reports suggesting that migration from Honduras northward could increase as a result of this violence, and that's only natural. Do you expect that that what's happened in the last few months since the November election will actually result in more people fleeing the violence, trying to come to the United States?
Yes, already, you know, the refugee shelters in the south of Mexico have reported increased number of Hondurans. And this is a big contradiction for the U.S. policy. You know, the U.S. government right now doesn't want refugees, want to send them back to their countries. If they don't want refugees, why they are sponsoring and why they are feeding policies like the one in Honduras that is exactly doing the opposite, which is displacing people from their homes, displacing them, their lives will be at risk. And for sure, if they stay, they're going to get killed. You know, if you are a leader, you're a student leader, if you are a religious or a union leader on the street, your name is on the list, your name is already on a leaflet. Those people will be leaving Honduras because death is certain, and they will, you know, going through Mexico and trying to escape to the U.S. So big contradiction on U.S. policy here in Central America.
Tell us a little bit more about Radio Progreso, the radio station that you visited, that you sort of responded to their call. What role does this play? We talked about media coverage here in the U.S., but what sort of task do local independent journalists in Honduras have in terms of getting the word out just within the country about what's happening?
Radio Progreso is a wonderful community radio. We were there just a year ago celebrating their 60th anniversary. They have been serving the community for 60 years, and I personally appreciate them because when a big massacre happened in El Salvador in the early 80s, the El Mozote massacre, the area was sealed from the El Salvador side, so nobody will have access to, you know, the physically 1,000 people being killed. Radio Progreso sent their journalists from the side of Honduras, and it was able to document and to denounce to the world what was happening. So for 60 years, they are in the community. You know, I like when they physically put the mic, the microphone in front of people that are organizing all kind of activities. You know, they have been accompanying the environmental movement. Right now, they are accompanying the banana strikers, you know, that are, you know, trying to get better conditions, the Garifuna communities. So they are all over the community, and their journalists are at risk. You know, that's why we want to call attention and say aloud, you know, this freedom of expression that we should be supporting in Honduras.
What do you think needs to happen here in the United States? I mean, there are so many multiple challenges with the Trump administration domestically. We hear a lot of focus in terms of U.S. foreign policy on the Middle East, which is where the U.S. is actively fighting wars. And it seems as though the situation in Honduras just falls through the cracks, isn't considered important enough.
We need more people to physically go there because when we visit the communities, you know, when we are in their homes, we will learn, you know, the injustice that is happening. You know, this shouldn't be. You know, we were with victims. This particular person, you know, again, you know, was in their home minding his business, and the police came into his house, and he ended up with a bullet in his back, paralyzed for the rest of his life. So this is supported by our taxes. So this is not something that is happening far away, you know, without us being part of it. You know, we need to call on to people, you know, of faith, you know, people that support human rights, and pay attention. I remember one word from Berta Cáceres, you know, when she say, you know, let's wake up. You know, let's take a break from our social media and wake up and see what is happening. What is happening is that they wish that all the resources that are in Honduras be given to these international companies, eliminate all the services that the community has. You know, just this very week, there's a big debate in the Honduras Assembly to cut all services to people with mental disabilities. The same thing that Ronald Reagan did here in the United States, you know, in the 80s.
So you're saying that ultimately this is about neoliberal capitalism?
Yes. Yes. This is, you know, to make a small group of people mega rich, you know, by physically stealing their resources. But in stealing their resources, they will destroy the country. You know, they will poison the water. You know, Honduras is a beautiful country with tons of river, with forest, and these companies will come with their big machines and destroy the country, and then, you know, leave it, you know, messed up, you know, where people will not be able to live there anymore.
Now, Jose, let's also talk briefly about the politics in the country. Still, is Juan Orlando Hernandez's presidency cemented, or are there any legal challenges left? And is Salvador Nasralla and the broad coalition that backed him, you know, what are their next moves politically?
Well, I think that is very political. It will depend if, you know, people go home and forget about, you know, that's the wish of the people in power, you know. If people stay on the street, if people start mobilizing, because what is coming now is that government will aggressively, you know, start implementing another phase of their policies, you know, which will be, you know, giving away the rivers, you know, giving away a number of concessions. So it's a matter of how the locals decide to run the risk, you know, because now the government is committed to persecute, you know, to repress, to decapitate the movement. Is that people are regrouping and thinking what the next component will be. And definitely international solidarity must be a factor. If international solidarity starts paying more attention, which that's our wish, especially from the United States, and say this is not right, you know, this is huge violations of human rights, and we don't want our name to be related to that.
Are there other international delegations from other parts of the world, you know, from Mexico or from Europe, that are also participating in this sort of, you know, observer method of trying to hold Honduras's government accountable?
Yes, there are other groups, and there's an invitation, you know, right now. This is the kind of moment to regroup and see what the next step will be. But sending people to Europe, you know, sending people to South America, and explaining what's going on, and then invite them to come to Honduras. We ourselves are working with a group in France that they, you know, observe and help in conflict resolution, peaceful conflict resolution in different countries. We will have a number of Hondurans from the radio visiting 12 cities in the United States, you know, El Paso, the Boston area, the Chicago area, the San Francisco Bay area. We'll end up in Washington, D.C. on May 18th for a day of prayer and day of visiting national religious leaders, you know, Congress, and then have a bigger delegation go on the 19th back to Honduras with our visitors.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Jose, for joining us. Is there a website where people can find out more about the work you've done and the documentation you've brought back from Honduras?
Yes, they can go to share, that's share-elsalvador.org.
That's share-elsalvador.org, and we'll post a link to that from our website later today. I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Jose Artiga is the executive director of Share El Salvador. We've been discussing the recent emergency faith delegation from the U.S. to Honduras that he was a part of. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.